Did. Good morning. We have two petitions for hearing today. The first on my list is 0803, in the matter of amendment of SCR 20:1.15, safekeeping property trust accounts and fiduciary accounts. Presenter is Dean Dietrich. I have as appearances today Ken Smith, Keith Celine, and John Knight. Is anyone else making an appearance? All right. If you change your mind and wish to appear, please advise the marshal. Mr. Dietrich.
Justice, members of the court, my name is Dean Dietrich, and I am vice president of the Wisconsin Trust Account Foundation. And I am here today speaking on behalf of the Wisconsin Trust Account Foundation in regards to petition 0803. If I may, in addition, with us today is John Birmingham, the president of the Wisconsin Trust Account Foundation, and Mary Burke and Deb Smith, who both are members of the Board of Directors of the Trust Account Foundation. In addition, Mr. Ken Smith, who is a consultant from hired by the foundation from the the Resource for Great Programs, who will be speaking to you shortly. In addition, Diet Tomlinson and Rebecca Murray from the staff of the Wisconsin Trust Account Foundation are here in attendance, as well as several legal services providers who have submitted letters of support for the amendments that we are seeking your approval of today. The purpose for the petition is to update and clarify the IOLTA rules, or the IOLTA portion of the trust account rule, SCR 20:1.15, and through my comments I will simply refer to the trust account rule. The trust account rule has various provisions in it that require funds earned from the IOLTA trust accounts maintained by lawyers, those funds in the form of interest, to be paid to the trust account foundation. Those monies, of course, are used to fund the grants from the foundation to support legal services for the poor and needy. The primary focus of the petition is to clarify the rule and place within the context of the rule language that would provide that IOLTA trust accounts, the trust accounts that a lawyer maintains as part of their practice, would receive the same interest rate as other accounts that are similarly situated in the financial institution where that account is located. In preparing this petition, the Trust Account Foundation has worked with the State Bar of Wisconsin, with the Office of Lawyer Regulation, and has met on several occasions with the Wisconsin Bankers Association. The purpose of the petition is not to criticize the Wisconsin banks. The Wisconsin banks have been very supportive of the IOLTA program. They have set rates that establish and pay interest on the various accounts in their bank in accordance with their view of how these accounts should be treated. We are asking that the rule be amended to clarify and clearly indicate that IOLTA trust accounts are to be treated the same as other similarly situated business accounts, or accounts that where interest is paid by the financial institution to other customers of the bank.
Mr. Diedrich, can you give me an example of the, of another account that would be, quote, similar to the IOLTA, and that the bank, a bank, pays a different interest rate than it does on IOLTA?
I can give you two examples, and of course, these numbers are not going to be a specific number from a specific bank.
What I'm asking is not the numbers. I understand, at least the allegation is, that if it's an IOLTA, it may get 1% interest. I just picked that number. Whereas if it was a similar account held by someone else, it might get 2%. So I want to know what kind of account is similar. Would it be my money market account?
One typical example
an individual
NOW account.
Okay.
Maintained by the bank that the individual has their funds in. Another example would be a checking account that is maintained by a nonprofit organization, where they would have the same type of in and out transactions, but there'd be a different
higher interest rate. Okay, I understand.
And the third one, if I may, just very quickly, because I know it's confusing, and Mr. Smith will address this with some general detail for you, would be a sweep account, and that's an account where the funds at the end of the day are swept into a different interest-bearing account, earn interest overnight, and come back to that account the next day. These are affectionately called repo accounts. And those are often offered to businesses who hold a significant amount of funds in their account and can earn additional interest through that night transaction.
And before we go further, let me just ask you this. A lot has changed in the world since this was started in, what was it, 2007 or 6, where you started studying this and thinking about it. I may have the date wrong, but I could say July of this year, and my statement would still be correct.
Right.
A lot has changed. Interest rates have fallen. You talk about security of deposits and security of financial interests, and whether it's FDIC, insured, you know, that all sounded good in July.
It is.
What does it mean today?
A couple of things. First of all, we have specifically asked Mr. Smith and his organization to address for us.
That's fine.
The issues of security in the various different accounts or vehicles that we have identified in the rule. He has provided us with that report. We have shared that report with the Office of Lawyer Regulation, and I believe both the Office of Lawyer Regulation as well as the board are satisfied that the different vehicles identified in the account are secure, that in fact...
Secure as anything is today.
That's correct. That's correct.
All right.
The other point that I would answer in response, Chief, is yes, the rates have declined significantly. That is something that, as I heard the one person address this morning, something that happens every 100 years, they suggested, that the events of the last 2 months are a 100-year flood type of event. I don't know if that's true or not, but we are looking at this petition from two perspectives. First of all, if this petition is approved, and we understand that approval probably would apply come July of 2009. The correspondence back and forth with the Wisconsin Bankers Association, we concur that probably would make the most sense for all parties. There will be, we believe, additional interest generated from the comparable interest process, even with these low interest rates. And, of course, we are hopeful, as everyone is, that the economy will turn around and that additional income, when this was studied, as the Chief has pointed out, in 2006, the projections were for an additional approximate $2.4 million in interest income that would flow to the Wisconsin Trust Account Foundation. That number is significantly reduced at this time. But we believe that as the economy turns around and as those rates turn around, that would then result in that revenue that is, of course, used for legal services. If I may, I think it is, I believe the court knows that 23 other states have adopted some type of comparable interest rule. I'd like to simply identify the five purposes for which we believe this petition warrants your consideration. Number one, the petition clarifies the requirements and, as I said, updates the rule to establish the appropriate fairness for IOLTA accounts receiving and being treated the same as other business accounts within the financial institutions. It establishes definitions for the IOLTA trust account and helps clarify the interpretation of the accounts and how those accounts are to be defined. It creates options for the financial institution to place the funds in different higher yield accounts in order for them to earn the interest that would be comparable to the accounts that they offer to other businesses. It combines all of the provisions of the IOLTA rule into a new section CM that was designed to place all of the rules and requirements for IOLTA accounts in one part of the trust account rule in conjunction with many discussions with the Office of Lawyer Regulation, so there's clarity about that. And it contains a number of provisions that allow WSSTAF to work directly with the banks in Wisconsin to provide vehicles and procedures for complying with the comparable interest rule. Those purposes are really the purposes for which we bring the petition forward to you.
This petition, if I understand it, also modifies other parts of the WSSTAF rule, the IOLTA rule. One, to keep up with the recent U.S. Supreme Court case. But we are going to concentrate, I gather, from you just on the comparable.
That's correct, Chief Justice.
Okay.
The other changes, briefly stated, were to address definitional language regarding IOLTA accounts. And that was put into the language in conjunction with the Office of Lawyer Regulation to ensure that our trust account rule was not subject to some of the legal challenges that existed.
Okay. All right.
I would comment that you've been provided with a series of letters from other states that have implemented the comparable interest rule. We believe that the history of those states will be the same in Wisconsin, that there will be virtually no impact upon lawyers in Wisconsin practicing and using their trust account. There is a potential that they will be asked to sign an account for the sweep accounts, sign appropriate papers with the bank, but for the most part, there will be no change to how lawyers operate. We also believe that the petition as proposed and the language as proposed will not cause harm to the banks in Wisconsin.
Well, as I understand the material I read, no one is, and we'll wait to hear from John Knight, counsel for the Wisconsin Bankers Association, but as I read his letter, he's not objecting to the concept of comparable interest rates. That the Bankers Association's objections are to particular provisions, and that you have we got email and hand delivered your response, yours, the Trust Account Foundation responses, and then today I have on desk, and I assume all the other justices have a one-sheeter. Do you have it? Yeah. That's a summary, which is a good idea with the voluminous amount of material. So are you going to, and let me just preface this, point of all this is to get more money into IOLTA. because the point is there's more need for finances to support indigent people in the civil justice system.
That's correct, Chief Justice. I would phrase it that the point of this is to have IOLTA accounts treated the same as other similarly situated accounts.
I'm going to look at the result. The result that you want to get
in
this fairness concept is more money.
That's
right. Which means someone else is going to lose money, which is the banks, or at least not make as much money.
I think that's a more accurate description.
Counselor, how does your proposed treatment of these accounts compare with, say, a real estate firm's trust account?
If the real estate firm's trust account really should not operate any differently than it is operating today. If that account has a lot of in and out transactions, which they typically do, and they do not have a very large balance in that account, that particular account is probably receiving comparable interest right now because the banks have been very supportive in those particular areas. And so there should be no difference really in how that both is handled from the lawyer law firm arrangement and from the bank arrangement.
But currently the WSTAF accounts, the IOLTA accounts, are not treated the same as the real estate trust account is currently being treated.
We would really suggest that the difference comes for those trust accounts that have large balances in them, mm-hmm. where there may be movement of funds from that account on a regular basis,
right.
but have very large balances in them, where alternate vehicles are used by a business that has that same large balance to generate a higher interest rate and more income.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the crux of where we are looking for similar treatment.
Thank you. I'll phrase the question just a little differently. You want to be treated like the real estate trusts?
We want to be treated like those business accounts that have the larger balances to them.
Because the smaller balances in business are treated the way you are probably now.
The smaller balances are probably receiving the comparable interest rate from the bank, just like the small business that has that small account that has a lot of in and out transactions.
So this is really going to affect the big trust accounts.
That's correct.
Mr. Dietrich,
Justice Prosser has a question.
Could you repeat your second objective? You had five.
The second objective is to create several new definitions in the trust account rule to specifically identify IOLTA trust accounts and then allow those definitions to be applied to the administration of the IOLTA trust accounts.
Could I ask you a couple of very fundamental questions? I assume you have a trust account, or
yes.
you have access to a trust account. If you were representing me, can you give some examples in which my money might be in your trust account?
There would be several examples. One being if I were representing you in litigation and you paid me an advanced fee. You paid me $5,000, and that money would be held into the trust account. It would not be paid out until I earned the fees, sent you a bill, held the money the 5 days, and then paid myself, say I sent a bill for $1,000. Another example would be if you were to buy a home, and I was representing you, and the down payment, the earnest money of $1,000, would be paid to me and be held into the trust account. Another example would be if I was representing you in the purchase of a large business and the company that was buying your company would pay $100,000 to me, and that would be held in my trust account until the environmental review of the property or the buildings has been completed and a proper certification has been received, then that money would be released to you. Now, in the case of the $1,000, or in the case of the $5,000, if there's enough of those, you get to a larger amount, obviously. In those smaller cases, where the money is going to go in and go out fairly quickly, again, we are of the opinion that the banks in Wisconsin have treated those accounts fairly. When it's the $100,000 that will sit for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, it could be placed into a sweep account, or you may have a number of transactions with $100,000. Now, I must also be very clear that in some instances where I'm holding that $100,000, I may have to put it in an interest-bearing account, depending on the circumstances. In that case, it's not IOLTA money. The interest is earned by you.
It's never been quite clear to me when something ought to be in an IOLTA account and when it should get me some interest. Could you explain that?
Yes. The rules, we did do some clarification of that in the drafting. That was not the primary purpose for the petition by WISTAF. But when we worked with the Office of Lawyer Regulation, we thought we should clarify some of those. The ultimate decision and the rules would suggest that it is the best judgment of the lawyer to decide whether or not to put it into an interest-bearing account or an IOLTA account. The yardstick for that, however, is if the fees that you would have to pay for putting it into a separate account to earn interest are the same or more than the interest that would be earned, then you would look to the IOLTA. If there is interest to be earned that is going to exceed the amount of fees that you're going to have to pay to set up that account, then you would probably look to put it into an interest-bearing account with the interest accruing to the benefit of the client. There are some instances, I must confess, for tax purposes, and I am not a tax lawyer, where the client may not want to earn interest on that money. And we did address that in a little kind of a tweaking of the rule.
Now, as I understand it, let's use you again as an example. You have a trust account. Let us say your trust account is in the ABC Bank, and they don't provide the comparable interest. It's my understanding that you would be required to change banks, is that right?
Ultimately, if the bank refused to pay comparable interest after review, discussion and negotiation with the Wisconsin Trust Account Foundation, that yes, you would have to move that trust account to another bank. We are very prepared.
Now, I happen to have an account with the ABC Bank. I've been banking with ABC for years. I'd like to have you have your trust account in the ABC Bank.
And as a customer of ABC Bank, you then could have a conversation with ABC Bank and, first of all, explain to ABC Bank, and Wisconsin Trust Account Foundation would do this for you. First of all, explain to ABC Bank that other banks throughout the state of Wisconsin pay this type of rate to support legal services for the poor, that as a long-term customer of ABC Bank, you would like to keep your business there at ABC Bank, and you as a member of the lawyer profession recognize the importance of these IOLTA accounts and the funding for legal services for the poor. And I suspect in that type of a setting, ABC Bank would be very willing to pay the comparable interest rate that other banks pay.
So you really have a plan to enlist people to put pressure on ABC Bank to change their policies, is that right?
No, really our plan is for the Wisconsin Trust Account Foundation to work directly with the banks so that we would not have to involve the lawyers. And that's the way both other states have done it. That's the way the Wisconsin Trust Account Foundation currently works with banks because they're paying interest to us on a regular basis. So we have a very good relationship with a lot of the banks. Now, much of that is very transactional, if you will, and we are very prepared, and that is going to require an investment of time by the Wisconsin Trust Account Foundation to establish a educational program and a monitoring program so that in fact we're working very closely with the banks so they understand the comparable interest rate and are in compliance with it.
But what I'm really trying to get at, Mr. Dietrich, is theoretically you could have clients with money in your account who want to do business with ABC Bank, and you want to do business with ABC Bank, but WISTAF says you can't do business with ABC Bank. I mean, that seems to me to be the thrust of the rule, and I'm wondering if that doesn't raise some antitrust questions.
Well, first of all, I think the more accurate way that this would be described is that the Wisconsin Trust Account Foundation is not saying do not do business with ABC Bank. Wisconsin Trust Account Foundation is saying to ABC Bank, this is the requirements for comparable interest under the trust account rule. And there are numerous ways for you to earn the revenues to place your the trust account monies of law firm X into different vehicles, or to pay what's called a safe harbor rate or a set rate. If in fact the bank actually refuses to do that, then Wisconsin Trust Account Foundation would notify lawyer A or law firm A that in fact their bank is not paying comparable interest.
Is it a violation of the code of lawyer responsibility, attorney responsibility? I think that's what Justice Pratzer may be driving at. So, okay, now ABC Company is off the list, and there's been an issue whether this list should be published. What does the attorney do? If the attorney continues on with ABC, and ABC decides it's not going to pay any interest, or it's going to pay 0.0001, percent interest, is he in violation of the code? Is that at least one of your points? Let alone the competitive process.
Isn't exactly my point, but it's a good point.
Sorry.
We'll address that.
I mean, that's one point. Another point is whether it's you, with staff, or the attorney, you're putting the heat on the bank, because if the bank wants to retain his assets, they gotta come through. So, is it a violation of the code?
The maintaining that account would be a violation of the trust account rule. Just as if the bank says to you, lawyer, I don't want to do this overdraft notification requirement that's in the rule. You cannot keep your account at that bank. You can keep your account at that bank and be in violation of the trust account rule, be in violation of the certifications you make regarding compliance with the trust account rule. I think this court knows very well the importance of compliance with the trust account rule, and there are requirements that are placed upon lawyers, being in the profession we are in, being in the responsibility that we are in. This court has established an assessment on all lawyers for purposes of payment of funds for legal services to the poor. This is a similar analysis to that.
Mr. Dietrich, can I ask a quick question? You know, if you were working just with a private business, they have cost-benefit analysis, they decide whether or not, you know, they want to engage in a particular contract with someone, and they can decide what they want to do. The banking business, I don't know a lot about it, but they've got a zillion regulations they have to follow. Are these accounts that you're asking that they set up the kinds of things that they can just snap their fingers and set up, or is it something that they really have to go through a lot of hoops to be able to set up? I don't know.
The only difference between this account as an account that the bank would set up and the account that a bank would set up for a business customer, the only difference in setting it up and the process to set it up and the interest that's paid is the overdraft notification that I just mentioned. That is an additional requirement based upon the trust account rule. Otherwise, what we're again asking for is that the IOLTA trust account be handled and treated the same as a business account, the same qualification requirements, minimum balance, those types of things. Fees would be handled the same. Now, for the most part, they would be handled the same. The only difference being the overdraft notification.
This process, at least as I understand it, puts an onus on WSTAF to figure out whether it's comparable, because you have to deal with each bank, and each bank may not be comparable to the other bank. In fact, they're competitors, and they'll be trying to compete. And it will depend on the market, whether it's Milwaukee or Ashland, I assume, which may or may not be true.
Right.
What is the increased administrative cost to WSTAF to do this?
The increased administrative cost will simply be upgrades to our data processing equipment for our computers. It will cause us to devote time within our administrative staff to meet with the banks, to negotiate with the banks. We do not have a proposal for and do not intend to hire any additional staff.
Okay. So you think you can do all this,
yes,
with your present staff, so that the amount of monies that you now collect and would collect if this went through would not be decreased by higher administrative costs?
Yes.
Have you checked that out with other states?
Yes, and that has been similarly the circumstances for them. And in other states, they have done the same type of negotiation, if you will. Some have been more aggressive with negotiation with local banks than others.
I think that I would suggest that the court might want to ask, as they have general questions. And then I'm wondering, Mr. Diedrich, whether we should proceed to discuss the points of disagreement. Because as I understand it, there's wide, as I stated at the beginning, although the Bankers Association and OLR can set their own statements, there's not a dispute that says, don't do this. I read the material. It's, okay, seems fair, but some of the provisions are too troublesome. Now, that's the way I read it. If I'm wrong, I'm soon going to find out. Chief, you agree with that. So
if you don't mind, I was listening attentively to all the broader questions, and I do have a couple of specific questions dealing with those disagreements.
Okay, but let's just see. Can we move? Would that procedure be acceptable to you, Mr. Diedrich? I once tried this with the bar, thought it was just great, saved a lot of time. Everybody turned out to feel that they didn't get a fair opportunity to be heard. So I don't want to make that mistake again,
yeah,
right?
If I could suggest to the court that if Mr. Ken Smith could maybe do about just a 3 or 5 minute
overview
on some of the more technical aspects, and then I think Mr. Smith and I could answer questions. Would that, Ken, could you do that?
All right. Was that acceptable to the court? It's not acceptable to you.
No, it certainly is acceptable to me, but I want to give advance warning of where I'm going, and that is, as the chief noted earlier, we received this morning a summary entitled Wisconsin Trust Account Foundation, a summary of WSTAF responses to the October 30th letter. I don't know if people from bankers have received a copy of this or not. It is my intent in looking at this summary to start with questions midway through that start with the interest issue, non-promotional to be added to rate. As I perceive this summary, most of the things above that are by and large agreeable or agreeable with a little modification. I intend to start with non-promotional and go down every one of those highlighted things because I perceive those to be where there are some objections. I note that non-promotional says no objection to this suggestion, but indeed this whole interest thing, there is an objection to the same branch of main office. So I would use that as a checklist. I'm just advising folks.
Does everyone have a copy of that? If you want a copy, would you raise your hand and the marshal will get one.
This is our attempt to take 8 to 9 pages and put it on one page.
I understand that, and so does the entire court. This is a summary, and it's a bullet summary, and I think that's very effective of your November 14th email hand-delivered long statement that, let's see, it was 10 pages or 11 pages. 10, right? Submitted by Ms. Tomlinson. Okay.
And
all right.
Responding
and what you should do, those who are appearing, is check this to make sure, and Ms. Owens, you check this list to make sure it does cover at least what we've identified as the issues of disagreement. Would you please do that, ma'am? Okay.
If I may, then, I would ask Mr. Ken Smith from the Resource for Great Programs out of Michigan to address this court very briefly on an overview, and then I think he can address your questions. We have retained Mr. Smith and his company to assist us in determining both the different issues regarding rates and revenues, as well as to assist us in the implementation of the comparable interest program. Mr. Smith and his company have done similar services for many of the states that have implemented comparable interest. So, Ken, do you want to?
Thank you. It's a pleasure to speak with you this morning. I'll try to keep my remarks really brief and maybe focus them a bit on some of the questions that you all have raised.
Thank you. You're Ken Smith of the Resource.
Right. I'm Ken Smith. I'm president and founder of the Resource for Great Programs. It's a small company that works primarily with IOLTA programs, legal aid providers, and other civil justice agencies around the country. I've worked with IOLTA programs since 1980, when the first IOLTA program was founded in Florida. I've also served as a consultant to Citibank, the ABA Commission on IOLTA, and the National Association of IOLTA Programs, as well as 16 IOLTA programs across the country, helping them with interest rate comparability requirements.
Where are you located, Mr. Smith?
Our headquarters is in Traverse City, Michigan, right across the lake from Green Bay.
We consider that Wisconsin.
I feel that. Deeply.
I just want you to know you're on friendly territory.
Especially when the Badgers beat Michigan, I feel that very deeply. Our implementation campaigns have helped more than 1,400 banks implement rate comparability smoothly. And I want to emphasize that in hearing your questions, I want to emphasize that not one of those banks has chosen to quit participating in IOLTA programs. Not one. They all have chosen to remain in the program and align their rates with the comparability requirement. I just wanted to highlight a couple of points in the petition that are really critical to this whole concept. I also wanted to just hit the highlights of our analysis of the impact on Wisconsin IOLTA, and more importantly, to give you kind of a snapshot of what the experience has been in the 16 states in which we have worked. So that's my purpose. I'll try to do it in as quickly as I can, and anything that I skip over, I'd be happy to answer specific questions.
And you can handle them in your the Q&A that's okay. Going to follow.
Okay, I hear your interest in brevity. I think one of the key things that I want to emphasize is that the rate comparability concept will have almost no impact on over 90% of the accounts in
Wisconsin. It's just small.
Those are small accounts. They're accounts that are less than 100,000 in average balances, and they will be virtually unaffected. Banks have been paying comparable rates, by and large, on those accounts. What this will primarily affect are 10% of the accounts which hold over $100,000. And it's important to know that there are accounts in Wisconsin, IOLTA accounts, that have average balances of as much as $2 million. And currently those accounts are earning now account rates. Now, now accounts were developed back in the early 80s as a vehicle by which people could earn interest on their checking account when they didn't need to have that money available to them, but maintain the liquidity of immediate withdrawal of funds. And since then, the landscape has changed dramatically, and we now have products like overnight automated sweep products, which by and large all companies, all institutions that have those kinds of balances, over 100,000, enough to pay the higher fees that are associated with these accounts, virtually all of them use these kinds of products. IOLTA is not able to use those products because now account structure is hardwired into the IOLTA rule, and that's what this petition is trying to address. It's trying to update the IOLTA structure to bring it into line with modern banking practices. So that's a kind of a key element of this petition. What's the impact on IOLTA in Wisconsin? Well, I think you've been provided with the results of the analysis that that my company has done for WISTAF. We found that the impact would range from a 10% increase today with the Fed rate at its lowest point in 50 years, 1.0%. And when rates go back up, and they will go back up, it will increase IOLTA revenues to the tune of about 160% more than what they make currently. So what this is about is making the structural change, aligning IOLTA structure with modern banking practices, but doing that in an extremely safe way. And there are many provisions in the proposed rule that ensure the safety of the funds that are kept in these accounts. Do this in a very safe way. It's important to know that at 1%, a Fed rate of 1%, this will have relatively small impact, but the structure will be changed. An analogous situation happened in Florida when in 2001, when the first comparability requirement in the country was passed. Immediately after that was approved by the Florida Supreme Court, 9/11 happened, the economy tanked, and the Fed dropped interest rates over the next several months to 1.0%, the level they're at now. It wasn't until 2004 that the impact of that rate comparability requirement was registered. And at that point, IOLTA rates on large accounts went from about 0.5% to about 4%, 4.5%, even approaching 5%. So the rates that those large accounts were earning raised to that extent. And that's the same thing that we're trying to achieve with this petition in Wisconsin. I think that's sort of a historical background. Let me just speak for a minute about the experience around the country to date. As I mentioned, we've worked with 16 IOLTA programs covering over 1,400 banks. Wisconsin's coming along at a very good point. Rate comparability is a tested and proven concept. Methods for helping banks come into alignment with this requirement are now well established. The biggest banks in America have implemented rate comparability in parts of their service area where these rules are in place. For example, here in Wisconsin, where Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank are very large banks, from an IOLTA standpoint, both of them are in compliance with rate comparability requirements in California, Texas, other states surrounding Wisconsin. Now, initially, banks' reactions were negative. Most of their negative reactions were based on misperceptions. Things like, what you're trying to do is regulate banks. What you're trying to do is set our rates. Some were concerned that comparability would make the administration of IOLTA accounts more expensive and add to their costs. Some fear that they'd have to change their software, and that's expensive and time-consuming, and they were concerned about that, and rightfully so. But these concerns, by and large, have turned out not to happen. Most banks across the country, in fact, all but probably four or five banks among the 1,400 that we've worked with, all of them have chosen either to emulate the rates that they're paying on their sweep accounts and take into account discount for the sweep account fees, but keep the accounts in the same structure. So they haven't had to change their software. They haven't had to change their account structure. They haven't had to sign up lawyers for new sweep accounts. They've simply kept the IOLTA accounts, and they've adjusted their rates upward on the large accounts so that they align with what those accounts would earn if configured as sweep accounts. We call that emulation, and that's one of the options that's provided in this rule for banks to comply. Other banks have chosen what is variously called a safe harbor rate or a benchmark rate, and that's also allowed for in the proposed rule. This is a very convenient device. It allows banks to simply comply with the rule by agreeing to pay 70% of the federal funds rate. So right now they would be agreeing to pay 0.7% on their IOLTA accounts. If they did that, nothing else is required. So it's called a safe harbor rate or a benchmark rate, and that's one of the options that's provided. It's easy to administer both for the bank and for IOLTA, but it's an option. Banks, if they do an analysis, they run their numbers, they find out that they could get by with paying 0.5% and have their rates aligned with their non-IOLTA accounts, then they have that choice and they're in compliance. So they have options. So by and large now, banks' objections have been, as the Wisconsin bankers' objections have been, with details. They haven't objected to the basic fairness of the concept, and that's a gratifying position. And the target of the technical assistance that my company has provided to IOLTA programs across the country has been to work with the banks, particularly the big banks, address any obstacles they see, provide them with support, provide them with access to the best practices and the solutions that have been developed in collaboration with banks in the states that have already gone down this road.
Have much experience working with the community banks? You talk about working with the big banks.
Yes. And that, by and large, is very easy because the community banks often hold a lot of small accounts. They sometimes don't even offer sweep accounts. They may offer a premium checking account in the in the interest of attracting deposits and attracting customers who need higher rates and competing with other banks that offer sweep accounts. They may offer very attractive tiered rate checking accounts. In that case, it's very simple for them to align their rates with the IOLTA requirement. They just offer those same rates to qualifying IOLTA accounts. The Texas experience is interesting in response to that question. Texas has 520 banks, probably the largest number in the country. We helped with the large banks. Betty Torres, their IOLTA director, single-handedly worked with the community banks, and all 520 were in compliance, 100% of the banks in 4 months. Utah has 65 banks, again, 4 months, 100% compliance.
How many banks do we have?
320.
And community bank?
230.
Got my numbers reversed. 230 banks.
Including the community banks?
Yes. All the IOLTA participating banks. So let me just wind this up. There's five principles that we apply, we urge our clients to apply, to make this work smoothly for banks, and more importantly, make it work smoothly for their law firm customers. One is, use a process that's transparent, fair, which includes things like advance notice of all deadlines, a clear timetable, published in advance. So that's one thing, transparent, due process. The second one is ample time to make changes. And it does take time. Banks have to be able to have their committees meet, they have to work this through their organization, they have to have their IT people look at the technology, you know, implications of whatever they're trying to do. They need to get everybody in line. This takes time, and it's appropriate that they have the time to do these things. So ample time to make these changes. A third is flexibility to deal with obstacles that arise. And this is, the ability to offer flexibility is really assisted by a provision and an agreement with banks to have an effective date by which the banks are shooting for to have the rate change be effective. Let's say that's April 1. So have that clearly in mind. And if a bank, and that's, you know, allowing ample time to make these changes and get everybody lined up. And then the goal is to hit that date, rate changes are effective that date. If a bank has some obstacles due to its, you know, whatever, its structure or its technology or its agreements with service bureaus or whatever, if it needs more time, it can have more time. But it agrees to make its adjustment of rates retroactive to April 1. So that flexibility can be provided without penalizing IOLTA, which would run counter to the purpose of this whole program and this particular requirement is to generate more revenue for IOLTA, do it fairly, make it work for the banks, but not, you know, have incentives built in for banks to stay on track and to do this promptly. So that's flexibility, support and technical assistance to the banks. And finally, a level playing field. That's very important to banks. That the IOLTA Foundation carried this out in a professional, transparent way. Same policies apply to all the banks. No bank can cut a special deal that would put them at a competitive advantage over the other banks in the field. And this is important, and this is a very fundamental principle of the rate comparability rules and the way they've been implemented in the states that I am aware of.
Are there any questions for Mr. Smith? Not at the moment. That doesn't mean ever. Okay?
Okay.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Justice Prosser.
Sir?
Mr. Smith, Justice Prosser has a question.
When you said no bank could cut a special deal, isn't that anti-competitive?
Isn't that what?
Anti-competitive.
No, I mean, a special deal meaning that all of the banks are required to comply with the same requirement. That is, they align their rates with what they're paying their other customers. So we've had instances where a large bank would try to sort of assert its market power. It may be a bank that holds 500 or 1,000 IOLTA accounts. And they have tried in some cases to say, okay, look, we pay 2.5% in the other states that have comparability requirements that we operate in. We'll pay you 2.5% because we want our rates to be the same across our market area. And our response is, that's not what this rule requires. It requires that you pay in Wisconsin what you pay your other customers in Wisconsin. And what you pay your other customers in Wisconsin is X. So that's X is what is required to comply with this rule.
And has anyone challenged this comparable IOLTA scheme on the basis of an antitrust suit?
Not to my knowledge.
Has anyone challenged these comparability rates or anything with respect to IOLTA legally in any of the states?
Well, in relation to the rate comparability requirement, not to my knowledge.
I mean, has there been litigation in any of the states about the validity of IOLTA accounts?
There has been litigation with regard to the validity of IOLTA in general. And the United States Supreme Court ruled favorably, and I believe the state of Washington case, about
a year and a half ago. What was the name of the case? Bankers something or other?
Washington Trust Foundation. We can provide you with that. So we'll provide the site to.
I thought some of your changes in this were to meet some of the litigation that has occurred on IOLTA. I'm sorry, not on dealing with comparable interest rates, but on dealing with other issues, so that they were not taking of property from the owner thereof and giving it to IOLTA. I mean, I thought that was one of the issues, and that's why you are suggesting some of these changes, and I'm sorry I can't put my fingers on it at the moment. So the answer to Justice Frost's question is yes, there has been litigation, and IOLTA has been challenged as a taking of property from A, to use a phrase, Peter, to pay Paul.
It, in the page five of our petition, we reference Brown versus Legal Foundation of Washington.
Yeah.
I have the cites if you wish.
But
they did find that IOLTA as a principle was acceptable provided you met certain requirements. And that's what we've done in rewording the language at various parts of the rule. So we are in compliance with the principles identified by the United States.
If I remember correctly, that case indicated that where a lawyer could get interest for his or her client, then the lawyer had an obligation to put that account into a separate account in trust for that particular client, and as you said earlier, pay that interest to the client. But the whole point of IOLTA was you didn't get enough money, you got pennies. So for each client, when you divided out the IOLTA account, therefore, you could do that, and that was upheld, but that there's an obligation to pay the individual client where the amount is sufficient to separate it out from IOLTA. That was my understanding of the case. I did not reread it for purposes of this hearing, and if I'm wrong, you ought to set me and the court straight.
But I believe that is correct, Chief Justice.
All right.
Dietrich, Justice Rogensack asked a question about real estate trust accounts. Where does the interest in those accounts go?
Again, it would depend upon if you're maintaining a real estate trust account for one real estate developer, that may go to that particular client. But traditional real estate transactions where you're holding that earnest money for a period of time, I believe that it is going to all go into the IOLTA account and is going to be held in that account, usually because the amounts of the earnest money are so small that interest would go through the IOLTA process.
I don't think that doesn't answer your question, does it?
What I was assuming, perhaps incorrectly, that a real estate trust account wouldn't be the same as an IOLTA account.
Held by a lawyer or held by the real estate people?
Yeah, held by some other entity.
He's talking about holding, what does the real estate company who holds money for individual people who are buying or selling property, Who pockets the money? Is it the individual whose money there is, 10 grand, or is it the real estate company who's got the trust account? I think that's the question. Is that your question? Okay.
I can only use my personal experiences in acquiring homes, and it hasn't been many. I didn't see any interest for money that was held in earnest when I made a purchase and certain money was held aside. Those are not lawyer IOLTA trust accounts. They're not covered by this rule whatsoever, and I don't have much more experience than that. I think that interest is somehow acquired by the real estate closing agent.
Well,
I asked this somewhat this question somewhat off point. Simply to get at this, what is the theory? Just say it in common sense words. What is the theory why the court can have trust account, IOLTA trust account rules set up all of this? What is the authority for doing that? Would it extend to a real estate company's trust account?
To my understanding, it would not extend to a real estate closing account or title company's trust account because they are not lawyers engaged in the practice of law. That's another day.
Don't even think about that.
I will not. But we do not have jurisdiction, the court does not have jurisdiction over those title company trust accounts. Now, the IOLTA accounts and the ability to take those interest income derives from the constitutional issues of taking in that. But you're asking really more general than that, which is where does the ability and the authority of the court to exercise control over a lawyer IOLTA trust account. And it comes from the supervision that you have over lawyers, and that is, to my understanding, and I have more knowledge about trust accounts than I wish I had, across this country, while there are different degrees of regulation in the states, all the states have trust account rules that govern the administration of monies that lawyer holds on behalf of a client as part of their practice.
I think you have to start at the beginning, at least the beginning as I remember it. Lawyers' trust accounts used to get zero interest. For all I know, the real estate trust accounts get zero interest. I don't know that. But the lawyer's trust account got zero interest. And IOLTA developed saying, hey, look, the bank is making money out of using these trust accounts. For the lawyer to pay out pennies to every $100 that the lawyer got was not worth the bookkeeping or any other expense. So IOLTA developed to say, hey, these are pooled funds. No one person has enough interest, and administratively too, to get the interest. But as a total in the Goya's trust account, it amounted to enough that interest should be paid by the bank. And since you can't give it to the lawyer to make money out of his trust funds, and you can't give it to the clients, because it's not feasible, practical, what you do, said the IOLTA people who came in, is take that and give it to civil defense, in effect. That's how IOLTA got started. Now, this is the next step in IOLTA, of saying, now we got IOLTA, we got these pool funds, we're getting interest on it, right? Now we want to increase the interest. Why? Because it's not fair that lawyers' trust accounts are treated differently than other pooled business accounts. I mean, that's where we are.
Right.
And it was, IOLTA was challenged as being authorized. And I gather that that has been now accepted. And this court, I think in their original IOLTA rules, although I did not go back and look at those either for this, I remember, though, I think that that we have some of them in our packet, has just been accepted and then modified. Are there any other
questions? Mr. Smith,
just
one final question. You look like a young man. And suppose all 50 states develop these comparability rates. What's the next step to keep you in business?
I'll be in the nursing home when that happens.
Regulate nursing home. got a ways to go.
So, I mean, is there an next chapter?
Well, there are huge challenges in civil justice, and your legal needs study in the state showed that $16 million more is needed to bridge the gap between what poor people need in terms of legal help and the available resources to meet them. There's a huge gap. I and my company are working not only on the revenue side, but we're also working to help legal aid programs adapt best practices, develop new delivery approaches, and use that money much more efficiently and effectively to help more people. And I published an article in the NLADA Cornerstone a few years ago that asserted that 100% access to civil justice is possible through a combination of more funding, which is what we're talking about here today, and improvements in delivery methodologies, adopting new technology, and so on, to help more people with the resources that we have. So that's what the rest of my career is going to be devoted to.
So do local bars hire you to come in and help with their situation in their state? Is that how your company is funded?
Local bars, state civil justice commissions, IOLTA programs, the Legal Services Corporation in Washington. We've worked for a lot of different organizations. My company, the other thing my company does is do evaluations of legal aid programs to identify where they're strong and where there are gaps and things that can be addressed, you know, by use of new methods and so on to make them more efficient.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Now we'll go to, you want to say something, Mr. Diedrich?
Well, we can address the concerns from Justice Bradley, if you will.
Yes, I'm going to ask Justice Bradley to start at IOLTA participating institution list. That is in doubt. That summary reads as if there's agreement, but there is not. If you look at item 4, page 3, under tab 12, item 4, page 3, tab 12, there's a disagreement about that. It's my understanding from the Boardman firm letter, Mr. Knight, that they do not want a published list of the entities. It says, Section CM2B provides WSTF shall annually publish a list of financial institutions certified as IOLTA. WBA and CBW encourage the court to not adopt this particular provision. They concern the publication of the list will negatively affect those financial institutions which are not certified as IOLTA participating institutions, notwithstanding the fact that it is that this is intended to be voluntary. And then they don't want you to publish the list because it might include rate comparisons. And that they don't want you to do that. And it goes on about that. WBA and CBW suggest that the rule be revised to prohibit WISTAF. That's from moving, but that's another issue. I don't know if you've got moving on this list. Do you?
You want to address that?
Yeah.
Pardon me, Chief?
Yeah. They object to
the publication.
Yes. And then they want you to add to the rule, it's all under four. They want you to add to the rule that you shouldn't encourage lawyers to move IOLTA accounts from one institution to another because of the rate of interest.
Right.
Okay. They want you to say that. All right. So if you don't mind, let's start up there because, all right. What do you mean by publish the list? Where are you going to publish?
This is a vehicle which has been used in all of the states that I've been involved with in implementation, starting with Connecticut, going on through
Texas. Where
are
you going to publish it?
Publish a list.
It would be on the website.
Yeah.
And in fact, there currently is a list on the website.
Yeah. Now we got a copy of that list. Is that from the website?
Yes.
You have a list of all those banks? Okay.
The purpose of publishing that list is it really was first done at the insistence of a state bankers association to address a couple of concerns that they had about rate comparability. One was that they would be getting hundreds of calls from lawyers hearing that this new requirement was put in place, coming in to all the branches of the bank and kind of at random, asking if the bank was in fact eligible to offer IOLTA accounts. And so the bankers suggested publishing a list of participating banks on the web so that it would be available to all lawyers. They could refer people to it. And so that addressed that concern. It's turned out to be a very useful communication device, and it's also helped to kind of move the process along because banks know that if they're on track in the implementation process, they're engaged with the foundation, they're meeting the timetable, that they will remain on the list of eligible banks, and there's not a problem.
I'm just going to interrupt you for a moment. As we proceed this way, isn't Mr. Knight here? Mr. Knight? Yes. Would you be comfortable coming in and discussing each particular item this way rather than have a discussion with them and then have to have another discussion with you and lay it on the table, and we'll give you a time to do an overview and whatever your remarks are. Do you think that would work for you, Mr. Knight? Pardon me? Good. Marshall, I don't know if we need a hand microphone or it would work with this. But anyway, if you'd step forward, we'll give it a try. We don't usually do it this way, but let's try it. If it doesn't work, we'll go back to the old way. You've heard, Mr. Knight, you're John Knight, you're counsel for the Wisconsin Bankers Association and CBW, and you are with the Boardman firm. Is that correct? All right.
Correct.
Begin to the microphone, please.
Correct. My name is John Knight with the Boardman firm here in Madison and appearing on behalf of the Wisconsin Bankers Association and the Community Bankers of Wisconsin.
As I understand it, Mr. Knight, the bankers are requesting deletion of the published list requirement, and it's suggesting that attorneys be held responsible for determining whether a financial institution is a certified IOLTA participating institution. And WISTAF disagrees with you on that.
Right.
Could you advance your argument as to why there should be a deletion of the published list?
Well, we're concerned about its misuse, inappropriate use. We've run into some circumstances elsewhere through banks in our state that have banks in other states, where the list or published rates were used to to encourage banks to do more or something different, and in fact encouraged law firms directly to relocate. We'd rather not have the list. We think that this can be addressed. There's an agreement that will need to be signed between the banks and the law firms. Banks already certify in those agreements to certain things. The, for example, the overdraft provision is dealt with that way. We think this can be a matter direct between banks and the lawyers for the law firms in the documents that are prepared by WSSTAF and used by all those parties. And the banks simply need to certify that that we're in compliance and we've received our certification from WSSTAF. And that should be the end of the story.
Note that WSSTAF opposes your request, and its position is that the process as you would want it would be prone to mistakes and confusion and would prove burdensome to individual attorneys, because you want the individual attorneys, as I understand it, to be held responsible for the determination. And they also note in response to your position that, hey, it was you guys, they say. this is their position. I'm editorializing on it. They say it more artfully. It notes that the publication of such a list was initially suggested by bankers' associations. That's the more formal way of saying it.
Right.
Can you respond to their...
Right. Well, I can't address what bankers' associations may have done elsewhere. In our state, it's their preference that such a list not be published. And it may be the result of experiences that have come about as a result of these comparability provisions in other states. So whether the bankers' associations elsewhere in the beginning of the process felt that way, it's possible. I don't dispute it.
What about the burdensome nature of it?
I don't see the burdensome nature of it, because it's how IOLTA is presently run. It's run by contracts between the banks and their law firms and WSSTAF, and it's a third-party, three-party agreement. Basically, it deals with all of the issues we currently deal with under IOLTA, including the overdraft provisions. This is simply one more, as the Chief Justice pointed out. It's the next step, and we think that the way things are administered now by the parties will work for this provision as well.
You'll have to help me, and I can't find things quickly enough in this because it's too long. Does CM2B, as you read it, which is where the request is that WSSTAF annually publish a list of institutions, does that say it should put in their interest rates?
It does not, Chief Justice.
Yeah. And now, that's what I thought, but I just couldn't find it quickly, and I apologize to you. Now... they publish, oops, I don't want to get all this mixed up, otherwise I'll never find anything here on my desk. They publish in I don't know where this comes from, I'm assuming it comes from their website. They just list financial institutions providing the substance of the IOLTA program, and they say thank you to those who waived service fees, and they're in bold. And other than that, it's just names of institutions: Alliance Bank, American National Bank, Fox Cities, U.S. Bank. Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't read this print because it would fade it. It says above it, paying more than 1%, then paying 5 to 1%. I just didn't read that. That's what you're objecting
correct.
To. Correct. You're not objecting to the list.
That is correct.
So you wouldn't object to publishing the list.
No, they're going
to
put a list.
Your objection to publishing the percentage.
Right.
Don't you think it's good
right.
for competition?
We're concerned with how that list is going to be used, what else is going to go on to the list.
I'm going to take Justice Prosser's comments now. Isn't it good for competition that we print what you're paying?
Pro-competition is fine. Banks are okay with pro-competition. They deal with it every day. But we're concerned ultimately with WSSTAF taking the position one bank versus another. And we've seen it elsewhere, not with them, and I wouldn't expect it of them. But it is a concern where their counterpart in another state goes to a law firm, you ought to move from bank A to bank B now, because bank B is paying a higher rate. were concerned about that kind of interference between banks and their customers and their law firms, even with the long-standing relationships some have. Pro-competition is fine. You'll never get an argument from us on that.
As I understand it, counsel, then that moves to the next item you're touching upon already, that you request a provision. Number one, you've requested there be a deletion regarding the published list, that is, that you don't object to the publishing of the list, but you don't want the listed rates. Okay, so you want a deletion of that. Next, you want a provision that would prohibit WIS staff from encouraging lawyers to move their IOLTA accounts to other financial institutions because of the rate of interest paid on IOLTA accounts. And I understand WIS staff's response is or was that the only time it would contact a lawyer and tell them that they needed to move their IOLTA account to another bank would be if a bank refused to comply with the provisions of rate comparability. I don't know, Chief, how you want to, but let's handle that.
I accept their response, and if that were addressed in the rule or comments to the rule, if that's how it's stated, that's
how would you state that? I mean, it's always a little easier in a comment. Legislative language is much more difficult to be draft because it has to be precise. I mean, what would you say that wouldn't raise everybody's saying, oh, hey, why not talk about movement?
Well, their commentary or their petition perhaps already indicates that they're not for publishing. Comparability is not about comparability of rates between financial
right.
institutions. I think in that context, I would add comments to the effect that that would include or discourage WIS staff from also promoting comparability of rates and to discourage law firms from going to one bank or another over the rate, so long as both banks are in compliance.
Well, maybe it's better to say it positively that the goal here is not to change the bank's present practices regarding their rate structure, except to give the WIS staff, the IOLTA accounts, the benefit of the rate structures for others. Why shouldn't I go to one bank and say, why shouldn't I go to the lawyer and say, hey, that bank across the street is paying more than the bank you're using? What if they put that in the State Bar newsletter?
Well,
banks A, B, and C pay 5%. Banks D, E, and F pay 3%. Support IOLTA.
Switch banks.
First of all,
an issue
if I were representing that bank, I'd consider it interference with our relationship with our customer.
Yeah, but your competitors do all that all the time.
Pardon me?
Your competitors do that all the time. They have an ad in, XYZ Bank is paying 5%. Compare this with ABC Bank, Justice Prosser's
so
Bank.
So they would be encouraging customers to move their banking relationships based on rate?
Don't you do that? Don't the banks do that all the time?
Banks advertise all the time. That is correct.
They have promotionals. We're going to get to that.
Right. And they promote all the time. But here we've got a third party calling up a law firm.
So you think this is a third party interference? You think it's a tort? You think it's third party interference with a business relationship that it is a tort, a wrong?
Well, I'm always, as a lawyer, cautious when advising clients in that area. And I typically would say, don't interfere with their contractual relationships.
Okay.
It's generally not a good thing. And this smacks of that a little bit.
Okay. Got it.
Thank you.
All right, does anyone else want to say anything on IOLTA participating? I gather that you have no objection to a published list if it doesn't show the percent.
Right.
Right? Okay.
They already do that,
right,
as I understand.
Okay.
I just have a question.
Yes, Justice Gableman.
It doesn't seem to me anything in the proposed rule or what your organization, the organization you represent, is proposing would hinder or interfere with any attorney's ability to contact financial institutions whose name appear on the list of those participating in IOLTA to determine for themselves what the interest rates are.
That's absolutely true. I mean, that we don't discourage that in the least. There's nothing that we want to do to interfere with that, so I'm not aware of anything that would prohibit law firms from doing that.
And is it fair to say, I am not an expert in the financial institution area, is it fair to say that these interest rates fluctuate on a fairly regular, I think we've seen a lot of that in recent times, the interest rates mainly going down, but they seem to go down in fairly, or they seem to fluctuate in fairly short order. Is that also fair to say?
I think that's true, certainly in the current environment, as you observed, but generally speaking, I mean, banks price those deposits, if you will, based on their current need, their lending needs. A whole variety of different circumstances call for different rates.
I mean, especially in these sweep accounts, too. Don't they fluctuate sometimes overnight?
They do fluctuate. Absolutely. I mean, and currently the federal funds rate is 1%. So, and probably heading lower than that. And so there's a great deal of fluctuation out there.
And so in order to be accurate, any list which would include published interest rates would have to be published almost every 24 hours.
It's going to be outdated soon. And rate publications are difficult to interpret in any event. If you go to a large bank website and try to figure out rates and then factor in the fees you pay to get the rates and other requirements, it's kind of a difficult process. So rate itself isn't the whole story.
You're mentioning other factors, but I think it's helpful to discuss that a little bit. The other factors may include the amount that's in the account.
Correct.
I don't know what else.
Amount, term, fees paid, type of account, which has had a lot of discussion here today, money market deposit account or a checking account sweeping into.
So in order to be an accurate comparable, it would have to have a lot more than just an interest rate number.
That's correct.
All right, Mr. Knight. Now, next on this list,
and Chief,
Justice Bradley.
If it's okay with you, I'll ask Mr. Knight, and then I suppose others would have an opportunity to respond. And we're moving then to the comparable interest. The bankers asked that the interest rate be the highest non-promotional rate it pays to others, and this is the important part, at the same branch or main office location. I understand that WISTAF has no objection to the non-promotional be added to the rate language, but in issue is this language at the same branch or main office location with regard to the comparable interest. And can you advance your position?
In preparing for this, so I talked with banks, and obviously I talked with the associations, and talking with one large Wisconsin bank with branches all over the state. They've told me we pay different rates in different markets, at different branches, at different locations. The rates do vary. Other large banks who might have statewide presences, some might not do that. It might be the same everywhere. So you're going to get a variation among the larger banks who primarily would be the ones with this issue. So this comes out of, if I recall correctly, the rule in Maryland is where we began to focus on the issue because they had addressed it there and put it in their rule. So it's just to accommodate the realities of the marketplace.
And Chief, can we have a response?
Yeah, there is a response that WISTAF has. Mr. Diedrich?
I think it's been pointed out that we do have no objection to the notion of the non-promotional rate. and I'd ask Mr. Smith to comment regarding the same branch or main office location first.
Okay. In the states that I've been involved, rates are looked at on a very detailed basis. One of the first steps in implementation is to get information from the bank regarding its products and the rates and fees that are offered to non-ILTA customers for those products, so that we can, and the foundation can assess what would be, quote, comparable in terms of eligibility for ILTA accounts. And this is done in cases where a bank provides information that their rates vary by market area within the state. That information is taken into account, and actually the approach that that Mr. Knight has suggested is applied in practice. So, by and large, those variations across market areas apply to the small accounts, the interest-bearing checking accounts. Our experience has been that banks that offer sweep accounts typically offer them the same rate statewide, and in fact, where they cover multiple states, they provide the same sweep account rates across their entire market area. These are very competitive accounts. So, I mean, it's just almost technically infeasible for a bank to offer different rates in different market areas for something as complex as a sweep account. However, if the bank does that, then that is taken into account, and the rule would be applied on a regional basis. We just think that that applying that, writing that requirement into the rule, makes the administration of the rule excessively complex and costly, both for the foundation and for the banks. It would require that banks be tracking their remittances on a monthly basis, on a regional, they'd have to be flagging them on a regional basis. They'd have to be reporting their interest rates on a regional basis, and to hardwire that into the rule to cover all the banks in Wisconsin would not be advisable. It would be much better handled on an administrative basis in the implementation and administration of the rule.
If I understand the import of the rule, and Mr. Dietrich, probably you're the better person to speak to this, if we go along with what you're suggesting, and then a lawyer happens to put the money in a bank where he hasn't checked out every possible commutation and permutation of the interest rates with the fees and so forth, then that lawyer really is violating his professional oath. Is that right, or am I misunderstanding that?
Under the rules and language as suggested by the Wisconsin Bankers Association, that's correct. The way we have structured this is this kind of cooperative relationship between the Wisconsin Trust Account Foundation and the banks, so that there will be a IOLTA rate at that bank that's based upon what the products are that they offer. The Wisconsin Bankers Association says, leave it up to the lawyers. So now the lawyer has to go down and investigate all of those different options and all of those different rates. That's why we believe it is much better to deal with this from the perspective of the Trust Account Foundation working with the banks. What happens today when an overdraft notification is entered into is the lawyer goes to the bank and says, we need to do an overdraft notification. And then there are generally discussions between the Office of Lawyer Regulation and the bank to get the forms and to fill out the forms. It's not something that the lawyer is intimately, perhaps they should be, but they're not quite often intimately involved in that particular process.
So in this process, the rule that you propose would put the onus on the banks and on WIS staff to put together a list of banks, and if the lawyer chooses a bank from that list, the lawyer is done with his or her obligation.
Right.
Is that right? Okay, thank you.
So we would indicate that it is our intention that if the bank in Fenimore, which is a local branch of a Madison bank is paying a different rate than the Madison rate for the NOW account, for the traditional in-and-out account, we're going to take that into consideration in the review between the bank and the WISTAF. And the expectation is that the comparable interest rate for Fenimore Bank is going to be that rate, not what's paid in Madison.
So they will have the opportunity then to provide different rates in different parts of the state because of what's going on in the community. And then still the lawyers will also have the opportunity to support the local businesses in their community, as the businesses do tend to support the lawyers as well.
All right. Then that deals with non-promotional and at the same branch or main office location. What's your next one?
The next one is the choice of comparable accounts. Okay. So we've just dealt with comparable interest, and now we're going to comparable accounts. And it's a continuation in part of the prior discussion. As I understand it, the bank requests that a provision be added clarifying that the choice of comparable accounts be limited to account types available at the particular branch or main office location. And WISTAF says that no financial institution will be required to establish a new product for IOLTA, and again makes some of the comments that it just did regarding increased burden on reporting on branch offices and others. Mr. Knight, your position with regard to this choice of comparable accounts?
Well, we think it's pretty important and ought to be addressed in the rule one way or the other, just as the comment made by Mr. Dietrich about Fenimore will be treated like Fenimore and not like Madison. I don't see that in the rule, and that's one of our points. The same with respect to comparable accounts. Most likely, Fenimore is not going to offer a business account that sweeps into government securities, mm-hmm. most likely. And so that tends to be a larger bank kind of product, usually. And when dealing with comparable rates, we think that all be taken into consideration so that Fenimore doesn't lose its account because it doesn't have sweeps or somehow is forced to pay a sweep rate when it doesn't have sweeps.
Mr. Knight, what exact language in the petition do you think requires the institution to establish a new product?
I don't think there is anything that requires it, nor is there anything that says it's not required. It's just left open, and we would just it'd rather be addressed so that it's clear going forward.
Okay. So you want the language, no financial institution will be required to establish a new product for IOLTA. That raises questions for me because suppose they don't want to have any interest on a lawyer trust account. Do they have to establish it?
Well,
if they want this account to continue.
They're paying interest to somebody today, and if the IOLTA account is comparable to the interest-paying accounts in terms of qualifications, they'd have to pay interest on the IOLTA account. And when they certify to WISTAF, they're going to have to represent to them that they will.
Mm-hmm. All right. I just wanted to know if there was some precise language that was giving you this impression, because I didn't find it. I found that they only have to do what they do for everybody else that meets the same prerequisites, whether it's days in or amounts in or whatever the goals are. So I was just trying to knock out any language that did that. And you don't find that language, but you want to add language.
Right.
Okay.
You would have to
I
add
just
something.
Want to make
That's
that
correct.
Clear. All right. Does any other questions about that issue? Mr. Diedrich, do you have anything to say? Okay.
Are there guidelines?
Justice Rogan said.
Are there guidelines that the banks in different locations maintain when a potential customer comes in, and say it's Stark Realty, and they want to have a trust account open for the transactions that all of their brokers carry on. Are there particular guidelines that the bank has about what they're going to pay on this trust account? How do they figure it out? Do you know?
How do they figure it out? That's probably why I'm a lawyer, not a banker. I don't know how they figure it out, but sure, they do have their guidelines, absolutely.
And that's what we're asking, is that they apply those kinds of guidelines to this kind of a trust account. Right.
Correct. And if I can just take you there, historically, currently, as we interpret the IOLTA rules, now accounts is what are to be used. That's where the funds go. Those are the rates paid. Those are the limitations on the lawyers. Those are the limitations on the banks. Mm-hmm. So that sets the current rate. They now wish to have it based on the availability of other types of accounts if
right.
they qualify.
Right.
Right.
So all they would have to do really is to apply the same guidelines to a lawyer's trust account. Say Foley and Lardner opens a trust account in a bank, and that same bank has a trust account for Stark Realty's transactions. They would just really be applying the same guidelines to both accounts, wouldn't they?
Not necessarily, because as I understand the Abrita accounts, there are no interest rate setting rules from the state or any other agency in the state. So that's a matter between the banks and their depositors. With the new IOLTA rules, you're going to pay the highest rate available for any comparable product in the bank. So that's a different situation.
I see. Yeah, I see what you're saying. So Foley gets what Foley can negotiate, and Ross and Stevens, well, DeWitt Ross and Stevens now would get what DeWitt could negotiate, and Boardman would get what Boardman could negotiate.
Right.
Okay, and this is setting a platform that's always to be applied. I see what you're saying.
IOLTA
Thank you.
Accounts.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right.
Any other comments on limiting the accounts? Comparable, choice of comparable accounts. All right. Requested removal of CM4C1B. I have trouble finding that, so if somebody can help me, that would be good.
I'm having difficulty finding it.
I don't
also
think that's in there.
As I understand it, the bankers are asking that a provision allowing the IOLTA account, this is in the reference CM4C1B, to be established or converted to a government interest-bearing checking account, such as accounts used for municipal deposits. That language, that provision, a government interest-bearing checking account, such as accounts used for municipal bank municipal deposits. You want that removed, and I understand this staff opposes the removal, but I can't.
It's CM4C2.
I got it right here.
Got
now.
It now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. That's
the,
on
the
page,
numbering is just. Wrong.
That's actually
okay.
On page 9
right.
of the proposed petition.
On 9. Yes, that's right.
And proposed SCR right. 20.1.15 safekeeping property. So thanks, Chief. Anyway, you want that out.
Yes, because these IOLTA accounts aren't qualified to be government accounts.
I know, but it starts out saying, and this may be your language, an IOLTA participating institution may establish at the direction of the lawyer or law firm an IOLTA account or convert an IOLTA account to, assuming the particular financial interest institution at that branch, blah, blah, offers these accounts, and the particular IOLTA account qualifies to be established. That's the language you want. And then it won't qualify as a government.
They will not qualify as government accounts. And it's their list. The list isn't ours.
Is there any place where in this WSTAF petition, it says, which I think is WSTAF's position, namely, the IALTA count has to fit all the qualifications and eligibility requirements of any other.
That's our understanding as well.
But, and you saying it's not anywhere in this provision? Okay.
Well, government accounts simply don't qualify. So we've got an item, an account on a list of comparable accounts.
Well, then why don't you just want to delete two, right?
Pardon me?
You want to delete two
yes.
government accounts.
Yes, sir.
All right. What about the other language that you want on the establish the particular type, but only if they qualify? Want that language too?
Oh, we do, yes.
Okay. Mr. Diedrich, you know what we're talking about? Assuming we know what we're talking about.
That's right.
Let me be brief. I believe the court has accurately described the language. An IALTA account can only be compared to an account that it qualifies for.
Where do you say that exactly in the petition so we don't have to repeat it, although you concede that, I think, that sometimes there's repetition because you wanted to put all of the comparable interest in one area, so you were repeating. So tell me where it is. A little repetition doesn't hurt if it's exactly the same words. So all I want to know is, where do you say the bank just brings them in on the same rules, which I think is the right way to go here? And if we can't find it, can we agree that it should be in some place?
You got it. Hold that it is under 4B.
Okay, 4B, interest and dividend requirements.
Right here. Shall bear the highest interest and dividend is generally available to right. non-IOLA customers. Meets or exceeds the same minimum balance
or
other
eligibility
qualifications.
If any.
The reference to the deletion of C1B, it says a government interest-bearing checking account, such as accounts used for municipal deposits. The concern that we have with that deletion is the reference to municipal deposits, the such as, is an example. There may be a government interest-bearing checking account that applies to a nonprofit organization.
Like?
Like a United Way, like a...
But why are we interested in United Way? We're only interested in lawyers.
No. That would be the comparable account that you look to.
Okay.
Reference here...
Got it. All right, go ahead.
Yeah. The reference here is this reference actually under C1B.
It's now C12.
Yes,
C12B.
All right.
It's for comparison purposes.
All right. Well, it looked to me as if this I couldn't decide what it was, frankly. And when once I saw the Wisconsin Bankers problem, I couldn't decide if this was a municipality depositing its funds into an account and that you wanted to be comparable to that, or it was something else, let's use United Way, depositing it to an account that has only governmental securities. So that's what's bothering me about that. Why doesn't it fit under 5, any other suitable interest-bearing or dividend-paying account offered by the institution to its non-IALTA customers? You got a catch-all in 5. Why doesn't it fit under that?
I'm sorry, Chief Justice.
C5. What is this? It's CM4C5. Is a catch-all. It says any other suitable interest-bearing or dividend-paying account offered by the institution to its non-IOLTA customers.
I think that the language in C5 would cover the concerns that are being raised.
Will C5 be good enough and take out 2?
I believe that you could do that.
Yeah, now you got a lot. I got a few problems because anytime you have a provision that uses, that's these general ones that seem, we don't know whether it covers only the ones listed or it covers others or whether they're of the same nature. I mean, you got all the justum generis and exclusionis problems. But, you know, we'd have that anyway.
Right. I think the language in
those are real problems.
Right, right. We know how to deal with those, though.
Right.
Not well, but we know how to deal with them. All right. So 2 might very well be taken out if it comes under 5. Okay, then we don't have to worry about what 2 means. Mr. Knight, are you satisfied that the language in, let's see, all this numbering, CM4B, which says when the IOLTA account meets or exceeds the same minimum balance or other eligibility qualifications, if any, I mean, that's across the board.
I think...
you satisfied with that?
Our primary concern there is with the use of the word or.
Pardon me?
Our primary concern is use with the word of the word or.
Okay, so if it said exceeds the same minimum balance and other eligibility qualifications, that would be all right? Mr. Diedrich, you don't object, do you?
Okay. I'm sorry, could you repeat how you want it to read?
I'm sorry. It's on page 8 under tab. I think it's under 4. My papers have gotten a little confused up here. And it's CM4B. And it says interest and dividend requirements. An IOLTA account shall bear the highest interest rate or dividend that is generally available from the institution to its, that maybe or may not be added, non-IOLTA customers. When the IOLTA account meets or exceeds the same minimum balance and other eligibility qualifications, if any. That takes care of it, but if
it
you
does.
Don't, you better tell us.
Correct, it does.
Okay. Then we don't have to worry about the top of page 9, right? You look it over carefully.
I think your page 9 is different than mine.
Pardon me?
I think your page 9
Yes, it is different, and I'm sorry. I'll go back and give you the site. It's CM4C, and it's your option for CM4C. Let's not worry about the branch location now, because that's a big issue. When you sit down, check it out and see if that now covers you, okay? And I don't mean to, I know how hard it is to see all the ramifications of anything standing there. This is not your last shot at this. It's a first preliminary shot, okay, Mr. Knight? All right. Okay.
Moving right along.
Badly. Well, the problem is I don't think this list covers all of the problems. That's the real problem. I'm keeping a checklist, and I'll try and get to that next one.
I say it covers enough problems.
That's right. It covers enough problems.
The next is 70% versus 55%, as I understand the issue. And that is that the proposal provides that an IOLTA participating institution may pay a rate equal to 70% of the federal funds target rate in lieu of paying a rate of one of the other account alternatives. And the bankers oppose this rate and suggest that a rate more conforming to what they view as practice in Wisconsin would be 55%. And for the justices' edification, this is on page 10, where you see in SCR 20.1.15, page 10, where we have the number 2 at the top of page 10 that says 70%, and right underneath that, Wisconsin bankers request 55%. So that's the issue we're at.
That is, and it's not easily resolved. My understanding was staff looked at the websites for the five largest banks in our state and came up with 70%. We doubt that's representative of our state. We get anecdotal evidence to the contrary that rates are below that, particularly with respect to money market deposit accounts, which is kind of a comparable product. Either way, we're not talking about a lot of money today. It's either 0.7 of 1% or 0.55 of 1%. But ultimately, it'll mean something. And so we just don't see the justification for 70% in our state based on our understanding of what banks do here.
I'm sorry, do you disagree with their statement that independent analysis shows that even a benchmark rate of 60% of the federal funds rate would result in 4 out of the 5 largest Wisconsin banks paying IOLTA less than what they pay their non-IOLTA?
Well, that's theoretical. They could pay less today if they chose, and they don't. So setting a target rate doesn't necessarily mean those accounts will come down. Those banks will make their decisions. But we just don't think in terms of being representative of the industry here in the state at large that that's an accurate rate.
Is there any merit in a question like this? And I've really set myself up by asking it. But I always often think of Minnesota. They always want to do better than Minnesota, but not necessarily in this category. Is it a fair question to ask, is Minnesota a comparable market, and what is the percentage that would be applicable there? Is that fair to use?
Minnesota apparently has a target rate of 80%, but then you net out of that the fees that are paid, which is going to lower that. The other numbers, including the 70% here, is net of fees. So it's a bit apples and oranges. And I must confess, going back to Justice Presser's comments earlier in the morning, this area makes me a little uncomfortable. I understand its purpose. I understand the policy. I understand the administrative ease. But I'm not a fan of rate setting of any kind, so I get to be a little skeptical when we get to this. Let's set a rate of 70% and the banks say 55% and we come up with a rate that banks then target for these accounts. I understand the administrative ease of things, but I'm just a little hesitant about that area generally. Now, not all states have done this, by the way, have target rates. Just looking at the 23 states or so that have rules like this, it appears to me that just a little over half have target rates, and the others don't, including the state of Michigan, for example. So it's got mixed reaction out there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. They think a benchmark of 55% is too low. You think if 70% is too high. What do you think's reasonable?
I think Justice Cook said, what was that?
62.5.
And I am.
Got your calculator with you, pocket right up there, right.
He's an impressive.
The answer is somewhere between those two numbers, Chief Justice.
That's very politic, thank you. Okay, thank you, counsel. Mr. Diedrich, Mr. Smith.
I'd ask Mr. Smith to explain where we came up with the 70%, which of course is what Illinois and Indiana are at. And
Minnesota is
at 80%.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, this number was arrived at far from an arbitrary process. It was based on a very detailed analysis by my company, similar to that we have done for many other states who have set safe harbor or benchmark rates. And in that analysis, we looked in detail at the top five banks holding 80% of the IOLTA deposits. We purchased independent rate information indicating what those banks currently were paying at that time. Their non-IOLTA customers holding comparable accounts. These were accounts that were either invested in fully collateralized repo instruments or accounts sweeping into money market funds consisting solely of U.S. government securities. So we did a very careful analysis. We got independent rate information, which we purchased from a company that provides this information primarily for banks. It does research on a regular basis, and it sells this information to banks so that they can keep tabs on what each other is paying. So we bought this information. We applied it in a revenue model that takes into account a lot of factors, including target balances, earning credit rates, and more details than most of us would care to know, and figured out what the net rate each bank should be paying IOLTA to be exactly comparable on a net basis to what it pays its non-IOLTA customers. So we did this for the top five banks, and we compared that with what with the different percentages of the Fed rate, ranging from 55% on up to 80%.
I'm going to ask a clarifying question for me anyway.
Sure.
It seems to me that this, and I may be wrong, but it seems to me that this is a little bit like some kind of indirect regulation of that we're being asked to do of what banks have to pay out in terms of an interest rate. And frankly, I'm more than a little uncomfortable with that.
Well,
I wonder, setting that up as my premise, I wonder if any thought has been given to the two groups or the several affected groups sitting down and negotiating. Look, if you want to be on this list, the list that they've already agreed to, and they've said, yes, the list is acceptable, and it seems fair enough, sitting down, if you want to be on the list, then this is the rate that we need to see, or this is the percent, rather, that we need to see, whether it's 62.5%, whether it's somewhere in between 55 and 70. I wonder if any thought has been given to that.
Well, I think the whole principle of rate comparability is based on what banks are paying their other customers and fairness. So our analysis that I just described attempts to determine exactly what each bank is paying its other customers when you take into account all these factors like fees that the banks charge on different accounts.
I wonder how you'd take into account such factors as negotiating ability. I mean, some law firms are going to have a lot more ability to negotiate than others, so I don't know how that would be taken into account. But to my question, I wonder if anyone's thought of sitting down and negotiating a percentage out.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if anybody's thought of that.
But nobody's done it. Right?
But nobody's done it. And I think that the question of whether a 70% rate is reasonable or a 55% rate, I think needs to be addressed in the context that this is an option that banks can choose. And so the question is, how do we set a rate that represents something close to what banks generally across this state in this market area are paying their other customers? And for the top five banks, that number is close to 70%. So that seems to be a fair approximation of a comparable rate in general, and it's a simplifying vehicle. It's a vehicle that banks can say, oh, okay, well, we've done analysis in-house, we pay our other customers 50% of the Fed rate, and so that's not a good deal for us. So that's fine.
Do the banks have to file the rates with either the state or the federal government that they're paying before they're authorized to pay a particular rate?
I don't think so.
No. If I may address that, Justice, I think the negotiation, and negotiation may not be quite the right word, is going to take place during the process when WISTAF is talking to these banks as to what their other accounts are and what are the requirements of their other accounts. So I think there's going to be that kind of negotiation, if you will, during that kind of investigation discussion stage between WISTAF and the individual banks. The sub four of the rule right underneath that would allow a bank to pay a higher rate or a different rate. So in effect, the bank could come to WISTAF and say, we're going to pay X, are you satisfied with that? WISTAF is satisfied with that. That would allow that to take place. And this is an option. What we've learned in experience with other states is that many banks want this option as simply an easy way for them to bring their compliance with the rule.
Right, but I'm you're asking us to set it at 70%, though.
Right. And our basis for that is both the analysis and, again, what we see in other states surrounding us.
What's wrong with the idea of sitting down with them and saying, look, in order to get on that list, this is what you need to do?
I would say that there's nothing wrong with that, and that will likely happen within the context of sub four of the rule. May pay a set rate above comparable interest. But, again, there needs to be some sort of identification of a standard that a bank has to comply with. If this provision is not there, we would then look to 1 and 2, which really establishes your various standards.
Well, Mr. Dietrich, maybe I don't dig this, but you have D, IOLTA account rate options, right? That's the heading.
Page 9.
But they don't have page 9. My page 9, it's, okay, I'll give you this, CM. We always start with CM. Or D. Got it? It says IOLTA account rate options. 1, comparable rate. 2, the 70%. 3, IOLTA participating institution may pay a set rate above its comparable rates negotiated with WISTAF. Okay. Now it's 1 or 2 or 3, right? So those are the 3 choices. Now, why isn't 3 a negotiated rate?
It would be a negotiated rate with the bank setting it and saying that it's above what is a comparable rate.
But so they can't under this negotiate for less than a comparable rate, because the whole concept here is you're going to do a comparable rate.
Right.
All right. So what does 2 do for you? It gives you a or does it for the bank or for the lawyers? It gives a flat percent, right? So this is a sort of an easy way. I mean, I don't know if it's easy or not, but it looks easy.
That's exactly the purpose of 2, And I'm going between the petition and the
I'm sorry.
The document you have.
Right.
That is the exact purpose for number two. It is a rate that's established within the rule that has been determined to be comparable. It allows many of the community banks to say, this is the rate we're going to pay, and then they make their conversion, and they're done.
So these are just three different ways. Is there any other way? Any catch-all?
Really, number one, which is the
comparable rate.
Pay the comparable rate, and then you have the different vehicles to measure what right. that comparable rate is.
Got it.
Can they opt in and opt out of their choices? Choose one, two, or three. Maybe after 6 months they don't want to do one or the other. How is choice governed?
They could opt in or out of those. Number three is going to be at least be the base rate. Yeah. Number one is going to be their comparable rate. They will select number one if they want to do the calculation and it's less than the 70%. Mm-hmm. If they do the calculation and it's higher than the 70%, they could opt for the 70%.
But number three would never be less than
70%. That's correct.
Okay.
Mr. Knight mentioned that only about half the states that have implemented these rules have a benchmark rate or safe harbor rate, and he's correct, but I think the trend is toward including this because it's proven to be beneficial both to banks. It's been attractive to banks. A fair percentage of the banks in the various states actually choose this option, and it's easier for WIS staff to administer. So, in fact, I know that some of the states that implemented these rules early, like Florida, Michigan, some others that don't currently have these provisions, are considering going back to their courts and asking for that to be added to their rules.
Okay, are we done? Do you want to say anything about this again, Mr. Knight?
Mayor, Justice, just a final comment on this little debate. Just looking at my list, five states have 70% or higher in the country. And I've never thought of us as a particularly high rate environment here. I would like just to comment on two of the items on their checklist, if I may.
Which
talk about fees now, or where are we?
Oh, fees.
No.
What do you want to comment?
Well, I wanted to talk about the first two items on the list, if I may.
Oh, which two?
Yeah, on their one page.
Yeah, I understand, but okay. There are several items. I wanted to know which two you want.
The top two.
Risk.
Risk and lawyer, what we call lawyer
okay.
choice. And I just wanted to explain why we raised these.
Counsel, would you mind
just finish
the bottom one, which
okay.
is allowable fees.
Right.
And as I understand it, the bankers want to add to the list of allowable fees charged IOLTA accounts the federal deposit insurance fees because they're customarily charged to similar non-IOLTA customers. And WISTAF has no objection. So I think
right. It looks like there's a common ground there. Our purpose was, if it's comparable product and comparable rate, there ought to be comparable fees.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to be able to check that one off on
yes,
my list.
This feels so good.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
A long list. Mr. Diedrich, do you have? I'm sorry. Are you done with allowable fees? Mr. Diedrich, given no objection. Okay. So we agree on that. All right.
So the first two items on the list, one dealt with risk, and it's somewhat an unstated issue that we, representing banks, just want to make sure everybody understands, and that is when we talk about comparable products and comparable rates, sometimes the rates get higher for products that carry more risk. And in this particular case, it goes to the issue of FDIC insurance. One of the comparable products they have proposed be included is what's called a sweep account. And so money at the end of the day is swept out of the checking account into government securities. While it's in government securities, that's not FDIC insured. And people need to understand that, and our customers, lawyers, and law firms need to understand that, that they're making a choice. We're okay with the choice. These are products we provide. But they need to understand, and it goes to my second issue about lawyer choice, but it's just important from a bank point of view that its customers understand.
What do you think should be put into this rule or comment or whatever showing the issues of security involved here?
Perhaps it goes into the IOLTA agreement, which I'm sure they'll revise as a result of this rule.
The IOLTA agreement with the
between
bank?
The banks and their customers,
okay.
The lawyers,
right.
And with staff. That might be one place to put it.
Okay.
But it's linked to my second. So there, you got the FDIC insurance issue, and I know WISDAF says, well, but still, it's government securities, and they're in pretty good shape, so we shouldn't have to worry about sweeping into government securities. But if you were sweeping into Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac preferred stock today, you would be worried. So they got some backup, but still, technically, it's not FDIC insurance when some might expect it. If I were a lawyer custodian of an account, would I be real comfortable with that? I'm not so sure. So that's just an item that we want everybody to understand. And the second is lawyer choice.
Counsel, before you get to lawyer's choice, have you had an opportunity to review the November 6, 2008 letter from Keith Saline on behalf of OLR addressing
yes.
this issue of security
yes.
and the sweep accounts and the money market accounts?
I did.
Did you want to say anything in response to that? I'm not inviting it, but their conclusion, as I read that letter, which is on our tab 16, was that they've been in contact with the ABA representatives who have monitored this stuff around the country and are acknowledge that there's risk, and there's always a risk of, you know, the overnight sweep accounts, but they are supportive, as I read.
They seem to be comfortable with it.
They're comfortable with the amount of risk
right.
because they think it's minimized after talking with the way it's done in other states and being advised by the ABA folks. That's my summary. I hope it's
right.
accurate.
Right. They seem to be comfortable. There is some anecdotal evidence in there, what the FDIC will do in the event of a failed bank. Maybe yes and maybe no.
Mm-hmm.
But it's unlikely in our state. We all know that. So the risk is minimal. But I don't think anyone should go into these products thinking they're fully FDIC insured at all times, and they aren't. And that can cause a rate to vary.
I think we understand you want the legal profession to understand
that's
potential
correct.
Risk here. Okay, of these.
The lawyers, that's absolutely
all right.
Right. And then it really goes to my final item, which is lawyer choice. That's just what we call it. But nothing surprising here. Banks deal with their customers. Our customers in this case are the lawyers. And our communication should be with them. They should be directing where the funds go into various products, not us, not the banks. WISDAF has sort of indicated, well, we, WISDAF, will deal with the banks. And that part's okay, but then I think there needs to be direction from the lawyers to the banks. We want WISDAF to deal with you on these issues. It's hard for bankers to go around its customers to a third party and start negotiating terms or dealing with issues or making choices without the customers being directly involved.
Well, what language did you change in the rule?
Well, I did. We did propose language, and we did in several places say at the direction of the lawyer or the law firm. And it probably doesn't have to appear everywhere that we have put it, but that was our effort to deal with it. It could be at the direction of the lawyer or the law firm, or it's or their designee or something to that effect if they wanted to bring in the concept of a third party.
Well, a lawyer or a law firm determines, I'm sorry, that's capability of a separate account.
Right.
Here's some language from the California, I don't know, it's the California rule, I think. An eligible financial institution shall have no responsibility for selecting the deposit or investment product chosen for the IOLTA account.
I think that's helpful. It sort of the banks don't decide it, but still doesn't deal with the issue of direction from the lawyers or not. Is somebody going to speak for the lawyer customer? Will that be WIS staff? It's kind of a tenuous relationship. We end up dealing with an entity that doesn't have a direct relationship with us as the bank.
Well, but you do that all the time. You have lawyers representing people who bank with the bank, and that interferes with your direct relationship with the customer.
That's correct. But there the lawyer has its agency or fiduciary relationship with that customer, and that's an acceptable relationship.
Right. And the WIS staff would have the imprimatur of the court if the court did this.
I think if language were added someplace, either in commentary or whatever, indicating that WIS staff has that authority.
As the what?
WIS staff has the authority to speak for or on behalf of the lawyers or the law firms maintaining these accounts, to speak with those financial institutions.
They don't for the particular accounts. They do to get the banks in line on this. That's
right.
A little different.
Right. But one of the things they've indicated in their response here a few days ago, that the lawyers don't need to worry about or deal with the selection of accounts, for example, that WIS staff will do that.
All right. Let's, if we can, we'll just try and finish this one off, because there are scheduled admissions to the bar. How many do we have, Tina? 22. That's a large number, and we'll have to use the courtroom rather than another room. So I'm going to ask, Diedrich, do you have any comments about this issue of lawyer's choice?
I believe those have been addressed in our submittals, Chief Justice.
It's addressed where?
In our submittals.
Okay.
And you wanted that language, or you wouldn't be objecting to that language from the California maybe I'm wrong, but from the California rule?
We don't think that language is necessary, but that language states what it is, I think.
And you don't object to the California rule?
No objection to that language.
Well,
I'm
I'll ask
sure
you, does it
far.
Resolve at least 70% of your problems? Or 62.5?
It's helpful, Chief Justice, but I still can't quite get over it. We're banks, and we're taught to deal with our customers. It's hard to get beyond that relationship. And
right. Well, you now have the customer who has
right.
a friend.
Right.
Both you hope it's a friend, and the customer hopes it's a friend that's dealing with this. Okay. If I might, I will, the court will break for lunch. I will swear in the 22 lawyers. The court will resume at 1:30. I've got a potential list of 1, maybe only a couple of things that are on my list that haven't been covered. Teresa Owens will confer with me to make sure that I've got the appropriate items that are still to be discussed, okay? In open session. And we will then move on to 0803 and have a hearing on that. We will then, after that hearing is over, we will then go to an open administrative conference on these matters. We are in recess until 1:30.